Did we get it?
So bad.
I think that what I said it last time and it was miles off. I think that might have been the closest. I'm not going to say the best.
When you listened back, did you hear how far out you were?
It was so out of sync.
Even our counting. Even the counting was so out of sync.
I was bigging it up as well. I didn't realise how bad it was.
You're like, that's the best one. Yeah. We were so in sync. We weren't. No, oh, how are you, Christoph?
I'm all right. I'm home alone. Your loving sister and my daughter have gone away on a little weekend trip to your dad's house.
They have, haven't they?
So I'm looking forward to being a bachelor for the weekend. I decided I'd go and get some food in for my alone weekend. And
yeah.
I think I reverted back to being a 15-year-old boy.
What did you get?
I got Pringles, pot noodles, yeah. Sunny nice. D.
Yeah.
Sunny D. Yeah, I didn't know they existed anymore. There you go, look.
Oh, nice.
I got a milkshake.
So
I got
yellow.
A big bag of chips. I got Mars bar ice creams. And then I bought some Nurofen.
Oh, that's actually quite responsible of you. Are you expecting to drink?
I wasn't planning on it. I've got a beer on the go now and I've got a bottle of red wine over there, but I think it's too much. I don't think I can solo drink a bottle of red wine.
No, that's just depression, isn't it?
Yeah, it's not a good look, is it?
We've,
but apart from that, sorry to butt in again. I had a nightmare.
Why?
Walking to Morrison's.
Yeah.
Walking through the alleyway. Guess what fell on my shoulder?
No, bird poo.
No.
No.
Worse than that, imagine you're me. You know my fear.
Ladybird.
Ladybird got me on the shoulder. Flapped it off.
Listeners.
And another three got me.
Another three.
They're attacking, mate. They're coming back.
Mate, words got out amongst the ladybird community.
Indira,
they're just dive bombing you left, right, and centre. The listeners are finding out so much about you. It's amazing. It's come to the fourth episode before they find out that you have a crippling fear of ladybirds.
I know. Ladybirds. It's not something I get into. It's a real term, though. It's called coccinellidophobia.
Coccinellidophobia.
And I do have a phobia of cock.
So, I was about to say, so does Rachel, but you've got a daughter together.
I have. One and done.
One and done. Wham, bam. Thank you, ma'am. Good. Yeah, I'm good. Thanks for asking.
I was just about to get into it, mate. I thought you'd start tearing into me a bit more about ladybirds, so I was holding off, but how are
No,
you?
I was going to say, like, I don't like spiders, but for me, it's the way that they move. I find it, it mimics my skin crawl and I'm scared of them. What is it about ladybirds that gets you?
That is digging deep roots into my personality and my past. I think if I ever had a psychiatrist, what is it when you chat to people? Psychiatrist?
Therapy. Yeah, yeah, psychiatrist.
I think that would that was probably the only thing in my past that haunts me, I think.
What?
The ladybird epidemic of Munsley. I can't remember what year it was, but there was millions, mate. Yeah, I reckon it was early 2000s. It's got to be. Early 2000s. Walking to the beach and it is just paths of ladybirds all over the floor, flying everywhere, mate. And that set it off. And then I was sitting down to eat a petit filou. I can't remember if this was prior or post. And a ladybird landed on my spoon.
Ew.
And that's it. That's what set it off. And they smell.
They smell? What do they smell of?
Yeah, if you flick one, it stinks.
Just don't flick them. I've never been in a situation where I've flicked a ladybird.
What would you do if a spider was on you, though? You'd flick it off.
Oh, I thought there was one. I was cleaning yesterday, as a good woman does, and I felt something on my shoulder, and I was like, fuck!
Was it a spidey?
I'm bad again. No, I don't know what it was. It just, I felt something and I was like, yeah.
Yeah, and that's what I get for ladybirds. So I understand your fears of spiders. I like spiders. Yeah.
You like them. You
yeah,
like
them
or you don't mind them.
No. Well, I'm not mates with any, but I'd want... I tried getting one. Rach wouldn't let me get one. I wanted to get a little jumping spider.
Oh, they're cute. Like Lucas.
They're so cute, mate. Have you seen one zoomed in?
No, I've seen the animation of one.
They're the cutest little thing ever.
They're
so
adorable.
I might get one and I might have a spider friend. You never know.
What would
anyway.
You call it?
Ah, I'd have to get back to you on that.
You could start a gang to rival the Bloods and the Crips, and it would be the Spids.
The Spids and the what? The Spids and the Webs?
the spids and the ladybirds.
Oh,
yeah, nice.
I'd be on the ladybirds side. You get the ladybirds.
No, I'd harvest the ladybirds. You'd harvest the spids, and we'd have a war somewhere between Lincolnshire and Norfolk.
You do realise the ladybirds would get absolutely brapped, mate. They're not surviving that. Brap.
No, they're not. I completely agree with you.
They're out. That's an unfair war. Anyway, how are you?
Oh, yeah, I'm really good, thank you.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, it's been a busy week. We went to a country music festival on Friday, didn't we? Which was so good. I particularly enjoy and have replayed a couple of times in my mind the time when you firstly lobbed a roll of toilet paper into the crowd along with some Welsh people that you'd met at the urinals, and then later on grabbed said roll because you didn't throw it with much conviction because obviously we're at a family friendly country music festival, about seven o'clock at night.
I threw it with conviction, mate. It was just a really bad throw. I don't think I've ever done a toilet roll launch before, and it just did nothing.
A fliddy throw from Chris there, which is a rare fall from form, given that you are a sportsman. And then in order to rectify it, I don't know what had happened. It was your intrusive thoughts mixed with your ADHD brain and a couple of beers that you'd had. But Chris then grabs the discarded roll from where it lies on the outside of the crowd. Commando. No, you threw it first as a security guy walked behind you, and then you commando rolled away with your pint of beer in hand. You got up, proceeded to say to me, "Didn't spill a drop," but I'd been watching the whole thing. The beer had gone flying, and I said, "Look at your shirt," and the lower half of your shirt was drenched from the beer because you didn't spill anything.
That does not sound like me.
It was just an episode of your fliddy behaviour and your intrusive thoughts. ADHD.
That's when my background brain takes over my body for a minute.
Yeah.
Like, it just had me for a second.
You came out of the commando role just like, I didn't have any control over my actions there.
It was epic.
I didn't spill a drop. No, it was epic.
Straight out of a movie, mate.
And the girls next to us particularly enjoyed it, whose cardigan you tried on. What was her name?
Oh, I can't remember. I think we called her Gravy Girl in the end.
Yes, yeah, because she came over. They were gone for hour, 2 hours.
And yeah, when they'd gone, it was busy.
Yeah, they'd gone to get food, and they'd said to Chris and Lucas, deeming them somehow to be responsible adults, "Can you look after our stuff whilst we're gone?" Which to Chris and Lucas said, "I'm going to try on the clothes that you've left behind." And this girl's tiny. She was smaller than me. And she got into her cardigan. I was like, fuck's sake.
Yeah, then I got told off. Then the little girls kicked off and we had to take them off.
Oh, yeah. Flozza and Emmeline.
Well, Emmeline didn't have such an impact, but Flozza...
No, she was on crack.
Yeah.
She was funny, though. She's on good form. For a two-year-old, she was on good form, as always. Yeah, and that was really good. And then previously to that, we'd been in Poland together. So we've seen a lot of each other over
and
the
apologies,
last 3 weeks.
Sorry to butt in. Apologies to everyone for the delay on releasing the next episode. But I think we were in pre-World War I times where we stayed in Poland, would you say?
I would say a similar sort of time to what we're going to be discussing, which would be a good segue. But there was not good internet there. There'd previously been internet, but they don't have broadband or anything. So it's all done off of SIMs in Wi-Fi routers, so there just isn't much point because it would be the exact same coverage you'd have if you were hotspotting off your phone. So we didn't have any internet, A, to upload and edit the podcast, and B, to record the podcast, which is what we'd hoped to do. We wanted to record it because it was based... We'd done a Polish special for Poland, and we weren't able to do it, so we're doing a retrospective belated Polish special for you all.
It's deserved. It was nice to have a detox from the internet for a while, though.
Yes, not a detox from anything else because we were smoking and drinking, as you do. But that's when in Rome.
It's holiday, isn't it? You weren't smoking. I don't think you did. You have one. You were zinning.
No,
zinning is winning.
I've got a zin in now, or velos.
I was going to say velos are top tier. You're recovering from a cleft lip, so that makes sense.
Thank
now.
You very much. Yes,
no worries.
I look like a rat.
No, I'm not saying people with cleft lip look like rats. That's not a fair assumption.
Talking a lot like a rat. Shanice.
I don't know what you're referencing.
Shut up, please. You don't know that?
No.
It was Shaq, wasn't it? Big Shaq. You know the guy that did Man's Not Hot?
Oh, I don't know. Maybe that's the one I've not seen.
Oh, it's funny. But no, Velos are the ones. Anyone that is also a nicotine pouch kind of person. Zins can get in the bin, but Zin is just easier to say, so I just call them Zins like you do with a Hoover.
What's you the know, other all one? Velo.
Vacuum cleans are Hoovers. Velos, that's what I've Velo. Got. Big up the Velos.
Nice, mate.
So I've got one in, I've got them next to me. Got my Cruise Campo opened and about half of it consumed because nice. I feel like we're on better form when we're drinking.
It always settles the nerves, doesn't it? I think the nerves are slowly depleting about doing this now, but it just soothes, doesn't it? Just promoting
Do you get
alcohol.
Nerves? Yes.
Not nerves, but I'm not the biggest talker in the world. So I don't know. I've got to prep, you know. I've got to prep.
So you were like, a podcast is a thing for me to do. I guess it's exposure therapy, isn't it?
Yeah, it's worked. No, it's got me talking.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not some, what's that thing when you... I'm not some introvert that can't have a conversation. I'm just not one of life's talkers, do you know what I mean? Like, if I'm sat with someone, I'd rather just be sat in silence.
You are... I don't think you're an introvert either. I just think you're a selected extrovert.
Yeah, they're nice. I like that.
Yeah,
there you go.
Because I remember
put that in my in one of my bios at work.
Selected extrovert. If I like you, I'll talk to you.
Exactly that.
Because I remember meeting you for the first time. I don't know if we told the story on the podcast before, but I was at uni at the time, and you and Rachel had come up and we had lunch together, and I was so hungover, and meeting you, I was like, it's really quiet. I thought you were really quiet and reserved. Little did I know that couldn't be further from the truth.
No, that was just me easing my way in. I need to figure out what I can grasp with people, you know?
Yeah, you sit back and watch and
evaluate
people. I can
offend, so I need to know who and who I won't offend.
Yes, and then you're like, let's go on a podcast where we can offend thousands of people at once.
Yeah, they're not my mates. Or my sister-in-law-to-be, you know? I have to be professional around important people.
Oh, yeah, that's true. And little did you know on that fateful day, or did I know on that fateful day 8-9 years ago, that we'd be at a country music festival and you'd be commando rolling, having thrown a toilet roll into a crowd.
I was just living the life that I wish I would have gone down at some point in my life. You know, it's a little boy's dream, isn't it? Doing commando rolls and having a gun.
Replace a gun for a pint of warm beer and you're good to go.
Yeah, and my grenade was the loo roll, so there we go.
Perfect. Yeah. Today we are doing belated Polish special, it's difficult to say, on someone who is an idol of mine now, having researched about her. I think I saw a video on Instagram about this woman, Christina Skarbek, whose naturalised British name that she then goes by in later life is Christine Granville, who's Churchill's favourite spy. What an accolade.
That's a big accolade, to be fair, especially for a woman.
Oh, yeah, 100%. And this is a huge part of her story, being a female, a femme.
What did she look like? Was she a good-looking gal?
She was a good-looking gal.
I'm going to quickly Google her while you're talking, just so I can have a little
Google. So this is the story of Christine Granville, spy hard with a vengeance. Do you like that?
Nice. I do like that.
Yeah, because she's sick. She becomes Britain's first female spy and the longest serving spy in World War II for the British intelligence services, male or female.
She was a bit of a honey, you know?
Yeah. Have you got a picture of her?
Yeah, good looking girl.
Yeah. Yeah, she certainly was, and she used that to her advantage. Very charismatic, good-looking woman.
Slag.
Well, wait till we get into it. So she was born on the 1st of May 1908 in Warsaw, and she is the daughter of an impoverished Polish count, Jerzy Skarbek, or Jerzy Skarbek, whatever you want to say. Not a vampire, though I imagine him to look like one, to be honest, like kind of skinny, big nose, and affluent Stefania.
Sounds right. Sounds about
Stefania
right.
Goldfeder, who came from a wealthy family of Jewish bankers. So she had with her an impressive dowry, which was great for this Polish aristocrat.
An impressive what?
Dowry.
What's that?
You don't know what a dowry is?
I want to spell it first, and I want you to tell me what it is.
D-O-W-R-Y.
Dickhead, I was going to spell it.
Oh, sorry.
No, that's
let's
fine.
Pretend.
That's
no, 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 let's pretend. We can cut that
D-O-W-R-Y.
Out.
D-O-W-R-Y.
Well done. Very good.
I was
going to
say
guess.
That anyway. If you put, oh, dowry. I thought it was a diary at first, but I obviously misheard what you said.
Sorry, that's my accent.
I don't know. Honestly, don't know.
Well, it's the amount of money that a woman comes with that her family will pay her potential husband.
Oh, shit.
As a way to look after her. Because in these times, early 20th century and before, a woman couldn't work, couldn't have property. So she was going to be a financial burden to whomever she married. So a way to offset that and make her a more attractive marriage proposal is the family giving some money to the husband. So it sorted out for a while.
Like a reverse prostitute.
Oh, because she's paying to get married?
Yeah,
that's a good way of putting it. A reverse prostitute. Yeah,
there you go.
So this Count Jerzy Skarbek, whatever you want to say.
I think Jerzy sounds right.
Yeah, I think so too, Jerzy. He lives life large, lavish, but he doesn't have the funds to back it up. So that's why they married. In her early life, she is described as a law unto herself. She's difficult for her mother to wrangle, and she becomes a complete daddy's girl. So she often goes out with him. He teaches her to ski. He teaches her to ride horses, very controversially for the time, astride rather than side saddle. He teaches her to shoot weapons. And because of this relationship, she's instilled with a great patriotism for Poland, because he is extremely patriotic about his home country, and a love for the Polish countryside. So throughout her childhood, she becomes an expert skier in the Tatra Mountains in Zakopane in southern Poland, which, as we will see, will serve her very well in her career as a spy for Britain. But unfortunately, he dies when she was 15. So that makes her want to live her life to make him proud.
Yeah, 100%.
But he unfortunately leaves behind massive debts, and eventually the family have to give up their estate and move to Warsaw. And in order to help support herself and the family, she gets a job at a Fiat garage as a secretary. But what this also means is that because she's inhaling all of these exhaust fumes from the cars, she gets scarred lungs, and she has to stop working there. So as a result of this, she receives compensation from the
employees. What age is
employees.
She now?
22. I think it's like 1930. She was born in 1908.
Okay.
So 22. So around then. She receives money from the employees' insurance company. And her physician said, go and live as much of your life in the open air as possible to try and heal your lungs. So she does that, and she spends loads of time hiking and skiing again in the Tatra Mountains.
Sounds like a bad lifestyle.
Yeah, it does, doesn't it?
Mate, that'd be so cool. She sounds like a real bad man bitch.
She's a real bad man.
She sounds sick.
That sounded so cringy even to my ears.
No,
like,
you're good.
The ad libs that I do sometimes, I listen back to them, I'm like, it's horrible. Like the
I've noticed that on a lot of them, we overlap with saying them. I think it's in both our brains at the same time.
Yeah, the tiny little hamster wheel of our brains.
Yeah.
Just like every so often it will skip and
ripping
and
random
align.
References out, yeah. Mm.
In 1930, she's also a runner-up in the Miss Poland beauty contest.
I did say, mate, she is fit.
She is fit. But she's very much bored by her life as a countess to be as an it girl in Polish society. So in the meantime, while she's doing all these other things, she becomes a smuggler.
Oh my
and she
God.
Smuggles tobacco and cigarettes over the mountains, the Tatra Mountains, in her youth, despite the fact she doesn't smoke.
She's nails, just, mate.
She's just thrill-seeking, looking for her next fix. So on the 21st of April 1930, she marries a young businessman, Gustav Getlich. in Warsaw. But
get licked or die trying.
Literally, he gets licked.
And he dies.
But then she licks him up.
Oh, God because, damn.
Like, Chris Eubank, to Chris Eubank Jr.
Stupendous.
Because... stupendous confectionery.
Would you like a smartie?
Would you like a sweetie? No, would you like a sweetie?
Oh yeah,
I'll take a smartie.
Smartie.
Stupendous confectionery. Smarties.
What a legend.
Honestly, when he dies, that'll be so sad.
I think that's worse than Attenborough going, you know.
Do you think?
I can't. I don't want to upset people, but I think he's bigger than everyone makes him out to be.
No. I mean, that is a controversial opinion.
Yeah,
if,
and it's
if
one
anything.
I'll live by and die by that sword.
What are your thoughts about Davy Atzen?
Fair enough. He's done some amazing things, and he's got a really cool voice. But I think that's about it.
He's done some amazing things. He's got a cool voice. And that's all we care about.
I think
whereas
so.
Chris Eubank Jr., you could say the same.
He's absolutely. Got a
he needs an OBE for services to the meme community. I think.
All right. Why do you think the nation loves Attenborough so much?
Davy Atz, because they've grown up with him and because he speaks
out. We've grown
out
up
about...
with people that are fucking paedophiles now, so you can't. That's true. That one is not on the tick list. Next.
But he's. He's dedicated his life to the protection of animals and for protecting our environment and showing the results of global warming in various environments that we don't necessarily see.
He has. Probably not the only person in the world that doesn't have the same recognition, so I don't count that one either. Next.
No, but then at the same time, so many people watch his programmes, so it gets
see,
more...
See, it's all television, isn't it? Look, come on.
It's all television.
It's not what it's not us. Not what it should be, mate.
Either way, going back to Gustav get licked. the marriage proves unsuccessful. They're incompatible, and it's ended without rancor, which is an incredible word that I've lifted straight from Wikipedia.
Rancor.
Basically, they end their marriage amicably. So then one day...
So like an official divorce?
Yeah, no, official divorce.
Oh,
but,
okay, but it's called a
there's no animosity between the two.
Fair, okay.
So one day she's out skiing in Zakopane and she loses control on a ski slope and she's saved by another Jersey, but this time not her father because he's
Dudek.
Dead. It's Gizutski.
Jerzy Gizutski.
Yes. Who stepped into her path and stopped her descent. This guy is from a wealthy family in Kamienets? In Podolski, I don't know.
Sounds
he's
like
wealthy.
An Egyptian goddess.
It does, doesn't it? Except yeah. It's in Poland. At 14, he'd argued with his father, and he'd run away from home, and he worked in the US as a cowboy and a gold prospector.
What? That sounds sick, mate.
Honestly, this story is
cool
just
people.
Full of characters.
Yeah, this is cool.
Already 10 times better and 100% better energy than the 11-9 podcast.
Yeah, swings and roundabouts.
RIP gone but not forgotten.
Never.
And then the two are married on the 2nd of November 1938 in Warsaw. Shortly after, he has accepted a diplomatic posting to Ethiopia, where he's going to be an ambassador. He'd spent some time previously in Africa, really enjoyed it, had written books about it, and he was excited to go back. So together, they head off so he can accept this diplomatic posting. And then in September 1939, what happens? Germany invades Poland.
Bang.
So, bang. Poland just gets fucked in any world events that
all
happen.
Holes filled.
All of them.
Yeah.
As and we saw made. When we went to the World War II cool. Museum in Gdańsk, which is also incredibly depressing.
It was really cool, though. That was a decent museum, you know. I don't think I've been to many dedicated museums on one subject. I think that's that's probably the only one I've ever been to, and it was really cool.
Really, really good.
Yeah.
So when they hear about Poland's fate and the fact that Germany's invaded. Immediately they get on the first ship that they can back to Europe to try and help out as much as they can. Once they're on board, there's this notice board that the captain has to relay information to the guests. And on it, it says, "Lost, a pair of ladies' pink panties." I thought you'd like that. And underneath, "Lost, Warsaw." And that's how they find out that their capital has fallen.
Crikey. Subliminal messages. Is that the right word?
Yeah. Not subliminal. No, I think that's pretty liminal. So what happens? The ship docks at Southampton. Immediately, her husband, Jerzy, went off to join the Polish forces in France. Within 2 days, because he expects her to just live as a lady of leisure for the next few months whilst he's away serving with the Polish army, drinking
cocktails. Is he trained in army things?
I don't know.
He's got to straight over.
I don't know. He's not really a main character in this.
Okay, that's fair. I feel like for him to just jump over straight into France, he must have some military training.
He must do. And also he's a member of, I guess, an aristocratic and wealthy family. So perhaps there is that element of having training. But also at this time, this level of warfare, it's generally people that are educated and wealthy that take up positions of leadership in the armed forces.
Yeah, yeah.
Not for any knowledge on battle or warfare, but because they're educated and probably can read and write and stuff like that.
That's fair.
Yeah. But Christina, she's not keen on just sitting there sipping wine and chilling.
She's a bad man.
She's a real bad man. And within 2 days, she's knocking on the door of the British Secret Intelligence Service, the SIS, and she is demanding to help.
She's got some balls.
She has some
big
balls.
What's the female equivalent of having big balls?
Big minge energy. She's got some big minge energy.
Yeah.
At first, she's not really well received because she's a female in a male-dominated world. She's also Polish, so she's met with a little bit of suspicion. She's not British. So they're not very much keen at the beginning on her working in the intelligence services. But what they're overlooking, what they eventually come to realise, is that as a woman, she can be ignored. She can go behind enemy lines and not be stopped, whereas an able-bodied man behind enemy lines would immediately be met with suspicion. This comes to a head when the head of MI6, George Taylor, says of her that she is a flaming Polish patriot, expert seer, and great adventuress. I believe she is a prize.
There you go. Look at her getting her props. Day one.
Oh, day one. She is making them see why she is useful to them. And this fact of her being woman, that being helpful, is highlighted by the fact that there's one vignette during the war. She stopped by the Gestapo in one of her missions, and the man that she was with was thoroughly searched. And she, in her bag, had hand grenades under some cheese sandwiches, but they just did a cursory glance over, didn't bother to look, and she gets away scot-free.
Sounds like a lunchbox in Kettering.
Except I feel like it would be NOS canisters rather than hand grenades.
Yeah, probably, to be fair. Those fuckers would blow themselves up.
I think of Kettering and I just think of NOS canisters and Vauxhall Astras.
Cracking night out, though.
Is it?
Yeah, mate. I mean, it's probably just me looking back on fond times, but being 18 to 21 was a good time in Kettering. I think from like 17 to 19, I was going out 3 days a week every week. Without fail. It was great.
It's a good way of spending your youth, to be
fair. Life, mate. Yeah, just getting twisted, playing football, playing my Xbox, and not listening at school.
Did you used to get hangovers back then?
No, mate. 3 days a week. You think I'm suffering from hangover? Bang, up to the next one. Bang, off to the next one. Wake up
That's
Saturday
crazy.
Morning for work at Sainsbury's for a 9-hour shift, get that out of the way, start drinking again. It was life.
I always had hangovers, even when I was younger. I'd still go out. But it used to be painful.
I get Still them. Is. It's raw now, mate. I hate it.
Yeah. What, like 2 days?
Off. It puts me off. I still feel tired on the... It will probably be a Monday, but the Sunday's a write-off.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Can't do it.
No. That's getting old for you.
So it takes me back to the when we came over to see you guys and we went out for lunch after going to the Stranglers gig and we were not in a good way.
I was determined to enjoy my night out and it was 3 o'clock in Pop World. And we'd been mixing drinks all day, which is why the hangover was so bad. I remember waking up the following morning and I was like, I'm still drunk. This is going to go so badly. And then I had to entertain Dad for yeah. the rest of the day. And I was like, oh, I am fucked. It was a good night, though.
It was a cracking night out. That was a
yeah,
good
fun. Yeah, that was so fun. Good. They also realise, going back to Christina, she has the skills and she's also got a plan for how she's going to get into Poland. She is an expert skier, as we've already said, from her childhood and her time with her dad.
Well, she did get caught once by someone, so she might not be that good.
No, this is the Gestapo thing. That happens later.
I thought
oh,
said, no.
When she's
Come
going
on,
down Zakopane.
You're throwing spoilers out now, dickhead.
Yeah. No, because I've already spoken about her getting stopped by the Gestapo.
Yeah, you did.
Yes, yeah, exactly. But then that also is a little meet cute for her second husband.
Oh, yes. Jasper. Jerzy.
Yeah, and from her work smuggling tobacco and cigarettes into the country, she knew the Goral Mountain people who were members of the resistance in Poland. So she knew the area really well. She knew the secret smuggling paths. She knew the resistance in the mountains. So she was perfectly set for being able to get in through the treacherous paths in the Toral. Oh my God, I've forgotten what they're called already. The mountains, Tatra Mountains. And she relays her plan for that she's going to go in through the through the mountains, Tatra Mountains, through these paths, link up with the Polish resistance. And in Christmas of 1939, she's in Hungary and she's about to take on her first mission. And that is to take in propaganda into the country, to find the Polish resistance, make the first connections between the Poles and the British intelligence services, and establish escape routes for people trying to get out of Poland into Hungary and then over to the Allied countries.
What's the distance between the two locations that she has to trek? Do you know?
I don't know.
Facts. Another thing you haven't come for. Facts, Megan.
Megan.
Oh, my God. Megan. Yeah, I'm sorry. This is all, to be fair, to let everybody in behind the curtain. I've done all this research this afternoon.
No, so this was planned pre-Poland.
Yeah, the idea was... But me this doing the research was not.
I think this is the first one I've pretty much come in at fully blind.
This is the best one for that.
Fully blind. I normally have a little look through your notes and stuff, but I've not had time and I couldn't be arsed. So I've...
So fine.
So I'm enjoying it. It's nicer this way.
Yeah, yeah. I think this is a good one because you're not going to believe what she does and what happens next.
I'm at the point where I don't think anything she does is going to surprise me because she sounds like she sounds like Jack Reacher.
Yeah, she is. She's literally incredible. She speaks multiple languages. She's well connected in the country because she is an aristocrat and she's been in those circles. She's really good at skiing. She can ride horses. She can shoot weapons. All of this, like, she's incredible already.
Yeah, she sounds. What was that pass she took to get over those mountains?
She goes in through the Tatra Mountains, but she knows the smuggling routes to get in.
I want to. I'm going to Google that at some point. So I'm okay. interested in that distance. Must have been mad.
It must have been. She, I think she goes in with a Polish Olympic skier and his brother is a Nordic skier. So they all go in together through
That's
these
so
mountains.
Cool.
It is cool, isn't it?
Yeah,
and she's
yeah.
just like she knows these people, and she's like, oh, I'm going to do this job for the British intelligence services. Do you want to ski through the Tatra Mountains and meet up with some mountain people and spread the
yeah,
resistance?
So
and they're
sick,
like, yeah, mate. Sick, let's do it. Like I said before, she's leveraging her pre-war connections to create this network across Europe. And she's very successful in it. She manages to create smuggling routes to get in supplies, to get in propaganda, to get money to the resistance. She creates a connection between the Polish resistance and the British intelligence services, and she finds escape routes. So she does this majority of the time from Hungary. She goes in four times into Poland and back, goes to Warsaw to deliver the propaganda, but also to find her mother. So her mother's a Jew, remember? And she's in vain tries to convince her to come back with her to allied parts of Europe. And unfortunately, her mother refuses. She then later gets put into the ghetto and she is killed there. She dies there, which is sad. R.I.P. Stefania. But while she's in Hungary doing this work, because at the time, Hungary is an independent state. So you can more openly work against the Nazis in Hungary without worrying too much about retribution at this point in the war.
About little rats.
Yeah, I suppose so, because later on, they then ally with Nazi Germany. So it all gets a bit spicy later.
Well, but we while she's different in... Different ends of the temperature scale then.
What did you say? Frosty?
I said frosty, mate.
Yeah, frosty and spicy. I think both of those work.
But opposites. When opposites collide.
When opposites collide. The story of Christina Scarbeck.
They do attract, don't they?
Opposites attract and collide.
There you go. Bang.
Love that. So while she's in Hungary, Scarbeck encounters a man named Andrzej Kowalski, who is a Polish army officer. She had actually briefly met him in as a child and then had encountered him again in Zakopane. Yeah. Oh, yeah. You can't see, but Chris is making a hole with one hand and then putting his finger through it, intimating that they had sex. Which, spoiler alert,
they did. It's a bit more concerning that you did say, oh, this is when she's not a child anymore.
Not when she's a child. So they'd met in childhood and she briefly encountered him again at Zakopane before the war. So she knew of him. He was a bit older than her. He was born... Oh, no, he's not. He's younger than her. He was born in 1912. She was born in 1908. Yeah, 100%. A cougar, you mean.
My mother.
When I'm in need.
That was the best synchronization we've had and it was unplanned.
Chris, that was so out of time.
Was it?
Yes.
No. When
it was really out of time. Till you listen back to it. Oh, I love it so much. We're on different times, on different planes of existence, and seeing it live. So Kowalski had actually lost a part of his leg in a pre-war hunting accident. So now what he's doing from Hungary is helping exfiltrate Polish and other allied military personnel from Poland through Hungary, through these smuggling networks, and collecting intelligence. So they're working together, creating this vast network of spies and people helping the Polish resistance. So whilst in Hungary, they get betrayed. And they're arrested by the Gestapo.
Damn.
I've actually got two instances where Christina is arrested by the Gestapo. So we'll come back to Hungary in a bit. I couldn't find a date for this one, but it's so fucking cool. I've got to mention it. So when she's caught in Poland, I think this is before Hungary, because the times that she's actually in Poland all happen before she's caught in Hungary.
Right.
Because she does those four missions into Poland, and it's on one of these that she's in the mountains with another Polish courier and a train operator or something has found them, and he keeps them under guard. The Gestapo arrive. And when the Gestapo have come to them, Christina notices that they're not motivated by the cause per se, but they're more motivated by money. Because with them, these both Christina and her mate, they've got money that's intended for the Polish resistance.
Yeah.
So the Nazi officers find this money and they've divvied it up between them. So she then starts playing with a cut glass necklace that she always wears. It was gifted to her as a love token by one of her lovers. But she always keeps it under her shirt so that none of her other lovers see it. Because she's playing the field.
How many lovers has she got, mate?
Oh, many. She has many lovers.
See, I did call her a slag at the start.
She's literally like James Bond.
But is then James Bond? He's a slag as well, isn't he? Let's not put it all on women.
Oh yeah, 100%. But she's enjoying herself, you know.
Fair play, mate. I would be breaking necks, cashing checks, spreading legs.
Breaking necks, cashing. That's exactly what she's doing.
There you go.
So when she realizes this, she gets this necklace out. She starts fiddling with it and she kind of mentions that they're diamonds. She's like, oh, my diamonds. When they see it and think that, oh, she's got this diamond necklace, They lunge for it. She pulls the string, and then these beads of glass, which they think are diamonds, end up in the grass. So then these two officers lunge for them to try and pick up all of these little bits of glass. And she kicks the gun out of the way because they've dropped the gun. And then they run away into the forest and they escape.
She's so sick, mate.
Isn't it just insane? So when we go back to Hungary in January of 1941, when they've been betrayed and the Gestapo officers arrive at her house, at her flat, they come in and she realizes that she's got some incriminating documents in the house. So she excuses herself, takes them with them, goes into the bathroom without them noticing that she's got these documents and flushes them down the toilet. And she comes out, and when they ask her about it, she said, "Isn't it usual to flush the toilet after use?"
She's had a dump.
She's insane. Yeah, exactly. She at the time she has a cold. So they take her and I think it's Kowalski. It is, yeah. It's her and Kowalski are taken and interrogated by the Gestapo. He's subjected to 19 hours of interrogation. She's also subjected to some pretty severe interrogation. But she's coming down with a cold at the time.
Okay.
And she kind of plays into that and she bites her tongue so profusely that it bleeds a lot.
Oh.
And then she pretends that she's coughing up blood.
Oh,
so they
devious,
think
mate.
She's got tuberculosis. Devious. It is so devious. And her dad had died of tuberculosis. So she knows what the symptoms are.
Right, okay.
So then they call in a doctor and they do some x-rays and they see the scarring on her lungs from when she was working at the Fiat garage.
That was it, Fiat cold.
Yeah, at the Fiat garage. And the doctors say, yeah, she's in the late stage of the tuberculosis. And because it's highly contagious, they just let them both go.
Jesus Christ.
Isn't that insane?
Yeah, especially the fact that I didn't just shoot them.
I know, yeah. I mean, pretty lucky.
Yeah.
So they get out, they go to the British ambassador, Owen O'Malley, who's in Poland, and they smuggle her and Kennedy. So his name's Andrzej Kowalski,
right.
But they smuggle him out in the boot. And the Nazi
Kennedy?
Guards...
You said Kennedy. You've confused me.
I will explain. Yes, he goes by both names, and I'll explain why in a minute. So
okay.
the guards at the border see the diplomatic number plate. He panics a little bit, and all he does is salute and just let the car go past. So they don't stop and search the car or anything. So the ambassador and his wife they smuggle them out in the boot. What he does, O'Malley issues them British passports, and it's the first time that Christina is given the name Christine Granville.
Right, okay.
And the name that Kowalski is given is Anthony Kennedy.
What's their English like then? Is it pretty? It must be pretty bang on to be saying they're British if they get
yes.
caught.
Yeah, it is pretty good. When she becomes, later on, we'll go into it a little bit more, but she becomes an agent for SOE, which is the... oh my god, stand by.
Secret Oppression of Elephants.
SOE. Special Operations Executive, there we go.
I was close.
You were very close. She undertakes lessons for her English to be better, but obviously
okay.
she can get by
yeah,
pretty
the
well.
Name Christine, what? Galansky.
So she's born Christina Skarbek, but she becomes
Christine
Granville.
Granville.
And Andrzej Kowalski becomes Anthony Kennedy.
Okay.
And this name, Christine Granville, she then uses both as an alias, and then later on she becomes a naturalised British citizen, and that's what she uses as her name afterwards. So she goes by
James
both.
James Bond, mate.
Yeah, literally.
008.
So
do you know why 8, though?
Why?
Because if you turn it on its side, it's two tits.
Yeah, perfect.
Like 00 infinity.
Yes, and infinity as well.
Yeah.
Perfect. Okay. 00 infinity boobies. So the ambassador and his wife managed to smuggle them out into Yugoslavia. Then Kowalski gets a car and they both drive from Yugoslavia into Belgrade, Serbia, where they enjoy a few days of drinking champagne in nightclubs and belly dancing bars. She's just
Damn.
Having the best
she's
fucking
having a
time.
Especially it's war times as well. She's having a good time of it.
Yeah. So in late 1941, Skarbek and Kaversky continue their journey into Sofia, Bulgaria. They then meet with the air attaché in Bulgaria, Aidan Crawley.
What's air attaché?
I'm guessing attaché for the Royal Air Force. Okay. I'm guessing.
What's attaché?
An attaché is a diplomat.
Okay.
I don't know if they have to, but I'm guessing they have to be military, like a military diplomat. Right. Yeah, because you get like defense attachés, so air attaché. I'm guessing that's it. And what they have with them and what Christina managed to smuggle out of Poland and managed to keep hidden from the Gestapo when she was interrogated in Hungary is some microfilm. And on it, this is from the Musketeers, which are a Polish resistance group.
There was only three of them.
Well, four if you count D'Artagnan.
Nah, he's wet.
He is so wet. He's not a horse, but he is so wet.
Who's D'Artagnan?
He's their little mate.
I don't think I've ever watched it, to be honest.
You need to watch it.
I don't think it was. Is it a film?
Yeah, there's a couple of films. There was a remake in like 2013, and there's a Mickey Mouse version as well.
I'll have to watch. Maybe all watch of them that. Today.
That's probably more your speed. I would highly recommend.
Thank you. I'll watch them all today.
And what this microfilm shows is an amassing of troops, Nazi troops and equipment, fuel dumps and ammunition dumps on the border with the Soviet Union. So this is on
tits between the slides.
Yes, probably. The infinity sign, 008. So up until this point in 1941, the Soviet Union had been allied with Nazi Germany. But the Germans were being very tricky and had decided as part of Operation Barbarossa that they were going to invade Russia, which ultimately is a decision that costs them the war.
Silly, silly Germans, mate.
So they meet this attaché Crawley in Bulgaria and...
Did you hear that?
Yeah, what was that?
I said silly Germans and Siri kicked in.
No, Siri, get back. That's what I mean, they're always listening.
They are listening.
Oh, my Siri's gone off now. No, stop.
Whoa.
Whoa. So when they get to Crawley in Bulgaria, they hand over a letter of introduction to confirm who they are. They're spies with the British intelligence. And they hand over this microfilm. And within days, it reaches Churchill's desk. And it confirms what he said was going to happen, which was that Germany was going to invade Russia as well. And he tells his daughter, Churchill tells his daughter that Christina is his favourite spy, which is quite cute. So immediately,
she's my favourite spy, to be fair.
She's like the only spy. She's the best spy.
Have we got any books about this lady?
Yes, actually. So Claire Malley, Balding. I believe her name Claire is. Malley. Yeah, Claire Balding. Molly wrote a book, Malley. The Spy Who Loved.
The Spy Who,
which I might have
I'm
to
just putting
read
that in my searches because I'm going to buy that book.
Yeah,
there you go.
Yeah, it's pretty good. So the microfilm makes it back to Churchill. He immediately warns Stalin, but Stalin is very suspicious of him, especially because at this time they're on different sides of the war. He doesn't listen to him, and Russia is then invaded by Germany and loads of people die. What did you watch? Enemy at the Gates?
Yes. What a film.
Yes. Cracking film. All about Stalingrad. Siege of Stalingrad.
It is
loads
so
people
good.
Die. But this is
Jude
what
Law,
you
right?
need to... It is Jude Law.
Probably this the only is what... film he's ever done where he's any good in.
No. Talented Mr. Ripley.
He's
good.
Nah, he's weak. I don't like him. He's not a good... I think Dumbledore made me hate him.
Oh. Why?
Don't know. It's just not right. It didn't feel right.
Is it because it's a bit... there's a bit of incontinuity between the fact that he looks really young as Jude Law and then when they have the flashbacks to when in like the first Harry Potter, when Dumbledore's talking to Tom Riddle, he's like real old And it's like, there's only like a few years between this, so there's like no continuity between
even
the two.
Even like the fashion and things was so different, it was just confused me. They're in really smart suits, and now they're looking like they're wizards from the 1700s. It just doesn't make
sense. Yeah, it's mental, isn't it? Yeah. Yeah, but you can't imagine Jude Law in wizard robes, can you?
No, to be fair. But then if you watch The Holiday, he's good in that.
Oh, that's the best film. I can't believe I didn't lead with that. Such a good film.
If you said that, I would have changed my mind instantly.
Yeah, you're right, actually. I'm sorry, that was on me.
I love you, Jude Law.
Yes. Big love to Jude Law.
Beautiful man.
Yes. Interesting hairline. But he rocks it, you know?
Yeah, he's a good bloke. I take all that. My opinions have changed. Prick.
And about particularly this and some of Christina's other exploits in the war, Churchill says that young Polish woman may have done more to alter the course of this war than an entire army division.
That's props, that is, isn't it?
That is props. So her and Kowalski head over to Cairo, which at the time is under British control. And there is a front in the desert between...
That was early doors that the Germans had Egypt, wasn't it?
They'd invaded and they were going after it, but it was all being held at bay. It's all in SAS.
Was that not the start of the war? Rogue Heroes?
Rogue Heroes, yeah. So this is in 1941, I think, throughout it.
Oh,
Cairo itself is a bit of an oasis. It's where a lot of the troops that are stationed in Egypt go to kind of chill out. There's intelligence HQs and things there. But it itself is quite far removed from the front, which is like 100 miles away in the desert. So they go there because it's easier than being in the kind of satellite states in Europe that are leaning more towards German and Nazi influence. And then in June of 1941... Peter Wilkinson of the SOE comes over to Cairo and he officially dismisses Skarbek and Kowalski from British intelligence services. But he keeps on the payroll with a small retainer, but that kind of forces him into near poverty.
Reasoning?
Reasoning is that firstly, they don't think there's going to be much more use to them because they're quite well known by the Nazis at this point. But also there's a lot of suspicion about them, mainly on the Polish side, because the Poles, the exiled government, had heard about her exploits and they thought, she's just a woman. Like, how could she have done all of these things without coercion or collusion, rather, by the Nazis? So they thought they'd done too well and they thought that they were just...
Never trust a woman.
Yeah, exactly. They certainly didn't.
No.
So there's loads of suspicion. And also it's almost like the Brits think that they're too Polish. The Poles think that because they're working with the British, they're too far on the British side. So they're kind of stuck in limbo. They're stuck in the middle.
Like Humpty Dumpty.
Like Humpty Dumpty. So during this time from 1941 to 1943, they just pretty much just chill in Cairo doing small menial jobs.
They've put the miles in, to be fair. They've earned a little bit of feet up time.
They've had a bit of feet up time.
I bet they're bored, though.
Yeah, Skarbek just wants to get back to it, to be honest. Kowalski, he clears up the misunderstandings and is able to resume his intelligence work, and that just leaves Skarbek on her own. When Skarbek's husband, Jerzy Gazutski, whatever his name is, he's informed that Skarbek and Kowalski have been fired, basically. And he took umbrage and he abruptly bowed out of his own career as a British intelligence agent. So I guess whilst he'd gone off to fight with the Poles in France, soon in 1940, that all got absolutely fucking smashed by the Nazis. So he turned to work with the British intelligence services. And he was like, why are you letting them go? So he quit himself, went over to Cairo, and then Skarbek told her husband that she loved Kowalski instead. Gizutski was like, cool, I'll just go to London then. And then he emigrates to Canada.
So not only is she a slag, she's a cheat.
Yes, she is a bit.
She loses a few points for this.
they were formally divorced at the Polish consulate in Berlin on the 1st of August 1946.
Any more? Was this one a kaput? A kaput? What was the little word?
No. What?
The little word for the civil divorce. Kaput? What was it? Was it a K?
They were formally divorced.
Yeah, but
Polish
there was
consulate.
So she's divorced once, and it was a nice divorce, and there was a word for it.
Oh, rancor, without rancor.
Oh, miles off. I knew there was a K in there.
No, there was rancor. There was a bit of rancor. A week after they had been dismissed in June, on the 22nd of June is when Germany begins Operation Barbarossa and invades the Soviet Union. So it kind of proves that her intelligence was correct. But even so, they still don't trust her.
What's Churchill thinking to all of this?
Well, I suppose at the time he's got bigger fish to fry, and perhaps he's not looped in on it, or perhaps he's like, well, if this is what the heads of my intelligence services think, then fine, we'll let it happen.
Turncoat.
Yeah, 100%. So she turns down offers for office work. She continues to be sidelined from the stuff that she wants to do, which is all the dangerous stuff, because she's a thrill seeker. Yeah, so after that, she just chills for a bit. And then in comes 1944 to 1945. So
she starts to get busy again.
She does start to get busy again. I think it's around 1942 that Churchill decides to reform intelligence services. And that's when he creates the SOE that we talked about before. Or just before that, it might be 1941. And the SOE kind of takes all of the agent work, the subterfuge and the smuggling, all of that sort of stuff. And whereas before there are loads of different intelligence agencies operating different agents under different umbrellas, he took it, amalgamated it all, and created the SOE instead. And they'd realised that, especially with the invasion, so the Normandy landings coming later on in 1944, they couldn't train spies quick enough. The average life expectancy of an SOE spy was about 6 weeks.
That's nuts.
It is nuts. So they needed people that could speak foreign languages, that had special skills, but also were fearless and quick thinkers. And they realised that really they needed people like Christina Scarbeck back. They need her back.
They need Scarbeck.
Her route back to active service with the SOE begins with her joining, you're going to fucking love this, the First Aid Nursing Yeomanry.
Little, she's a sneak.
Do you know why you're going to like that?
Come on.
In brackets, Fanny. So it's only Fanny. So it's an all-women charity organisation that has military-style uniforms, and that's used as a cover for many of the female operatives in the SOE. So you can see people in these uniforms going into a government building or receiving training and assuming it's because they're part of the First Aid Nursing Yeomanry, brackets Fanny. The SOE officer that recruited her back, Patrick Howorth, later jokingly said that...
She was a hoe with some worth, to be fair.
Can I just point out? You just did a perfect scale with your laugh and you almost went into a whistle note at the end. Do you know what? I never noticed that until you said it. So Patrick Howorth. Oh, crying.
Come on, right, we'll go through this. Come on, right, come on.
He later...
Snap back in.
He later jokingly said that the most useful thing I did in World War II was to reinstate Christine Granville. So Christina Scarbeck. Oh, my God. Her briefing officer in Fanny. Gwendolyn Lees.
The Muttley laugh is full force.
Was so impressed by Scarbeck, that she later named a daughter after her. Fanny Scarbeck. Also, Patrick Howorth named his daughter Christine too.
Can we nickname him Swayze from now on? Because I need.
Yeah,
to,
Patrick Swayze.
Yeah, yeah.
It's okay. He doesn't come up again until a bit later. Okay. So she was then, she, despite the fact that she's already experienced in clandestine work, she was still given SOE training, the same training that any other prospective agents would have gone through. And she was very bad at wireless transmitting and hated firearms training, but she loved parachuting, which is fucking sick.
Gosh, she's so cool.
So what the vast majority of SOE agents did was they went behind enemy lines, they gathered information, and they used wireless radios to then transmit that information away using Morse code and sometimes with voice. What made that so dangerous is that they only had a certain amount of time, I think it's about a minute, maybe less, before that signal could then be triangulated by the Germans, and then they'd know where they are and they'd go out and get them. Right. So that's why they only had a 6-week life expectancy.
Fair enough.
So she does this training. She, because she's already fluent in loads of languages, she's got French, Polish, I think she might have German, but I can't remember
she's
for
nuts,
sure.
Mate. She's nuts.
She is nuts. She's given a little bit more training on English. And then on the 6th to the 7th of July, I'm guessing overnight, 1944, she's parachuted into France, and she's the first and only female operative to parachute into theatre for the SOE. Yeah, so sick.
Do you know, does it piss you off that stuff like this isn't taught?
Massively. And it's the fact that her legacy had been, now she's getting more recognition. But especially the end of her life and the way that she was remembered all the way up until the 70s is so sad, considering all the work that she'd done.
She getting torn into, was she?
A little bit, yeah. We'll get on to that.
Build them up to knock them down, mate.
Build them up to shit on them.
Yeah. Well, you need to knock them down first to shit on them, because they're above you at that point.
Build them up, knock them down.
Shit
take a
them.
Steaming turd on their heads. So she becomes part of the Jockey Network, which is headed by a man named Francis Kamertz, who's the SOE commander for their
She's riding horses.
Oh, yeah, jockey. I like that. Well, she's good at riding horses, as we know.
I bet she is. She likes a good ride.
She certainly does. I feel like she'd be on top, though, don't you?
Mate, she's definitely a goer. She's not. She's not sitting around waiting for you to do your groove. She's getting your groove. Fucking hell!
Yeah.
Someone shoot me in the face. But she's,
getting into the groove. She comes first.
Oh, every time. I don't think she'd care if you did. You know.
No, she comes. She's like, you sort yourself out, hon.
Mission accomplished for her.
Yep, mission accomplished.
Do you reckon she role played a lot?
I think if it was more widely acceptable, she'd definitely peg her partners.
Yeah, but she could come in like the Nazi officer speaking German, making you feel like a naughty little Jew. And then she's...
Dominating you.
Yeah.
Yeah, 100%. So the job of the Jockey Network is to organise the French resistance fighters, the Maquis, in southeastern France, in order to weaken the German occupiers prior to the Normandy landings. Which was codenamed Operation Dragoon, which is kind of the worst operation name that we've come across
it's pretty
so far.
Rough, mate.
Considering, I mean, to be fair, we were at the dizzying heights of Operation Mongoose in the Cuba Missile Crisis, that Dragoon's a bit shit. If it was Dragon, it would be fucking
awesome.
Because
Mongoose is a word that needs a double O, but Dragon isn't.
No, but it's Dragoon.
You know, Dragon, what? Dragoon.
A Dragoon.
I don't like that one.
No, I don't either.
I hope this mission failed.
It's the Normandy landing, so it didn't, luckily. Anyway, so that the Normandy landings, Operation Dragoon, is going to take place on the 15th of August. So they're basically engaging guerrilla warfare and trying to organise the resistance to subvert the German occupiers as much as possible. They're blowing up railroad tracks, they're trying to get them more ammunition, they're giving them money, all of these sorts of things. Skarbek is also given the task of trying to subvert the Polish conscripts in the German army, because basically, when they took over Poland, anyone that had a slight German ancestry or able to speak German, any of these sorts of things, were kind of forced and coerced to work for the Nazi army.
Yeah.
And a lot of them are stationed along the Franco-Italian border in the Alps. So Christine makes her way into the mountains, and she makes contact with the French resistance in the area and also the Italian partisans on the Italian side of the Alps. And the Italian partisans, the leader, he requests some ammunition, shoes and packed meat in return for his services, which she organises and gets over to them. She also manages to link the two together so that they can kind of organise themselves. Then after a two-day hike onto the Col de l'Arche, which is a prominent mountain pass, very strategically important because it's a way to get through the Alps between France and Italy. She approaches this formidable fortress. She's climbed up into the mountains on her own. It's manned by 150 soldiers. And she's wearing this red and white silk scarf, which are the colours of Poland, and just brazenly goes up to these troops, the ones that she's identified as the Polish lot, and highlights herself as someone that wants to parley. She literally doesn't give a fuck.
G-Unit.
She speaks in Polish, she reveals her identity, and she talks with these 63 Polish soldiers and says to them, like, think of your country, think you want to be on the right side of history, like, you need to redeem yourselves having fought for the Nazis for so long. And she gives them a plan, a very detailed plan as to what they need to do in order to mutiny against the German commanders and defect over to the French resistance. And she says, you need to take the blocks out of the big guns, you need to take the small guns with you, take the ammunition, take the resources, mutiny against your German counterparts and join up with the French resistance. And 6 days later, the French resistance comes to the fortress and they do exactly that. And without firing a single shot, she gets these Polish people to defect.
They should have been in the firing line anyway, though.
Rats. Yeah, well, they redeem themselves now.
Yeah, but it would have been better. That, in a film, they would have redeemed themselves and then they would have shot them all anyway.
Redeemed themselves, and then as soon as peace came about, shot themselves in the head.
So okay, that took a dark turn.
We needed to.
Fancy you doing that.
On the 13th of August, 1944, at Dean, which is 2 days... Dinner, 2 days before the Allied Operation Dragoon lands in southern France, Kamerz, Zan Fielding, who's another SOE agent, and a French officer, Christian Sorensen, were arrested at a roadblock by the Gestapo. So this guy, Kamerz, is the SOE coordinator that she's working with and part of her jockey network. So they've been arrested and she hears about this. So she rushes back from the Col de l'Arche, cycles 25 miles to get to this prison. And on the 15th of August, when the invasion is happening, she circles the walls of the prison humming Frankie and Johnny, which is a tune that is a favourite both hers and Kamerz.
Okay. And do you know what it is?
No, I don't. Do you know what it is?
No, I don't, but I'll listen to it afterwards. Shall I get it up?
No, get it up now.
How do I do it?
You can only play 10 seconds, though, or we got copyrighted, even though we're not earning any money.
No one's copyrighting us. What's it called, mate?
Frankie and Johnny.
Frankie and Johnny. Mate, this is long-winded. Cut all of this out. Note to self. Oh, mate, typical, isn't it?
Is that an advert?
YouTube survey.
Fuck me.
That's a pretty sick song, to be fair.
That's pretty good. So she's humming that. And then Kamerz hears this and he hums back so that she knows he's inside and still alive, which is quite clever.
This is wild, mate.
So she then just decides to walk straight into the prison and she meets with Captain Albert Schneck, who's an Alsatian... as a liaison officer. He's an Alsatian. He's a dog. So she goes up to this dog. He's a liaison officer between the local French prefecture and the Gestapo. So this is going to be the local French authorities that are helping even under occupation and the Gestapo. And she introduces herself as Kamert's wife and the niece of the British Field Marshal, Bernard Montgomery. So the guy that's in charge of the British forces.
Yeah, yeah.
And she threatens him with terrible retribution. She says, the French resistance know that you have these guys arrested. if you do anything to harm them, they will come and they'll kill you. They already know that the invasion's happened. She's like, the Allied forces are very close. You need to give them up. And she sweetens a deal with 2 million French francs. And so he agrees to facilitate an introduction. He's one rich doge. he facilitates an introduction to the Gestapo officer, Max Weim, who's a Belgian in the area, and he has the authority to release the prisoners. So she quickly informs SOE back in London of the bribe. They airdropped the 2 million francs to her. And on the 17th of August, 2 days later, she goes back to Schneck's office with money in hand. They then go to Weim and they spend 3 hours in Schneck's apartment arguing with each other. Strippers and cocaine. Before Weim eventually agrees. And he's like, okay, I'll release them if you help me get out, basically. Because he knows that the Germans are on a back foot at this point. So that evening, Kommerz, Fielding and Sorensen, the guys that have been arrested, were marched out of the prison by Weim, who's in his SS uniform. And they thought they were about to be executed. They didn't know that they were going to get released.
Oh, did they not know she was there?
I don't think they'd been told. So instead, they get led to a car and they're driven to the outskirts of Dina, where Skarbek is waiting for them. She gets into the car, but they don't acknowledge her because they fear that she's a prisoner as well.
Right, okay.
So they want to protect her as much as possible. But then they drove to the bank of a river where Fielding helped Weim bury his SS tunic.
Whoa.
And it's only at that point they realise that they're being released, not executed. All four of them get out. Weim is taken out as well. And there's quite a few arguments. And the SOE agents are like, the only reason he released is because, you know, A, we gave him money and threatened him. But B, he thought he was going to, you know, be given immunity. So eventually he is given this immunity as well. So
they should have shot him.
They should have done. SS officer, he's probably done horrendous things.
Yep.
So at the end of the war, she has to fight to be given citizenship.
Hand-to-hand combat again?
Yeah, hand-to-hand combat. So she's given the OBE and the MBE. The French give her the croix de guerre, gets called a cardigan.
Nice cardigan.
You have done so well.
That is an outrageous accent. Is that meant to be your French? Here is your cardigan.
I'm French. Can't you tell by my outrageous accent? Your mother was an upstair, and your father smelled of elderberries. So at the end of the war, she's not immediately given British citizenship. So she's given all these accolades and honours. She's given the George's Cross. But they refused to let her become naturalised as a British citizen.
She just needs to marry.
Yeah, she does, really. That would be ideal. But then they'd never last, those marriages. So while she was working with the British intelligence services, she was given multiple temporary passports, but they never renewed it after the war. Poland had also become part of the Warsaw Pact, which meant it was communist. And not only was she a colluder with the British intelligence services, which meant that the Poles, A, regarded her with suspicion anyway, but B, the communists hated her. She was also a member of the aristocracy, which famously doesn't do well under communism. And
thanks for helping save the war, right?
Exactly. And her brother dies only a year. He returns to Poland. Only a year after the peace, he dies in a communist prison camp. She knows she can't go back. Also after the war, her name as a British intelligence officer is given in by the British services to the communists in exchange for an NKVD operative. And the NKVD is like the internal ministry and the secret police. So obviously there was some kind of NKVD operative in Britain that they wanted the name of. So in order to get that, they gave up her name.
We are a good bunch, aren't we?
We literally just were like, yeah, can you just risk your life for 6 years, please? And then we'll just leave you high and dry.
That doesn't sound like something Britain would do.
What? Nah. No? Never knew that.
No? I never knew it.
So eventually she got around this by refusing to accept the honours unless she was given British citizenship, which she was in 1947, I believe. You go, girl. But it doesn't really end that well for her. So as a British citizen, she doesn't really have much money. She works loads of different jobs after the war as a bathroom stewardess, as a coat check girl, as a clerk, all of these things. And in 1952, she's living in London. And at the time, that's when she was a bathroom stewardess on the Union Castle line. So it's basically cruise liners.
Such a fall from grace.
And the captain of the ship that she was working on said to the staff that if you served in the war and you got medals, that you're to wear them. So obviously she comes out as a woman with stacks of medals.
Yeah,
that's
what I mean.
That the Croix de Guerre, the George's Cross, OBE, MBE, loads of them. You can see a picture of them online. And the people that she worked with treated her horrendously because even though they were from loads of different nationalities, they were like, there's no way a woman could have got all of these medals. She must have stolen them.
That's fair.
Also, the fact that she's a British citizen, she was too Polish for the British, too British for the Poles. She was too masculine to be feminine because she'd done all of these amazing heroic activities, more than the ones that I'd just mentioned. And they treated her horrendously for it. So another bathroom steward, whose name is Dennis Muldowney, he had stood up for her. I know. It's just the names. They're incredible. He stood up for her and they became friends, but she quickly found him to be jealous and possessive. So she dumped
him. He wanted a piece of that pie, right?
He did. And she wasn't interested. So he stalked her and he wrote to her obsessively.
And then he stabbed her.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah. Yeah.
That was a good guess.
He started stalking her and he stalked her to the Shelburne Hotel in Earl's Court in London, where she was staying, and met her in the lobby and stabbed her through the heart. She died within seconds.
Jesus Christ.
On the 15th of June, 1952.
Fucking hell. So, what a way to go.
Yeah, horrendous. So Dennis Muldowney was arrested for her murder and he was hanged at HMP Pentonville.
He deserved
that
one. On the
30th of September, 1952, massively.
I feel like he earned that.
So that hotel, the Shelburne Hotel, in 1971 was bought by a Polish group and they found in the storeroom Skarbek's trunk containing her clothes, her papers and her SOE issue dagger.
Nice.
This dagger and her medals and some of her papers are now held in the British Institute and Sikorsky Museum in London, in Kensington.
We need to hit that bad boy up.
We do. She is, Granville or Skarbek is buried in St Mary's Catholic Cemetery in Kensal Green in northwest London. And in 2013, a ceremony marked the renovation of her grave by the Polish Heritage Society. So even in recent memory, she's not been forgotten. And I think her memory is being cultivated more and more as the years go on, especially keeping in mind her tragic death. So Kamerz, Kowerski and Howorth.
He's back. Swayze.
Yeah, Patrick Swayze. We're campaigning to kind of keep her memory alive and not 100%. To be sullied by the publication of lewd stories about her sex life, which were threatened in the 60s and 70s, which they managed to do. And they published various accounts about her life and her exploits that was true to what happened as possible and tried to show her in the light that she should be remembered, not just, you know, the fact that she was a bit of a James Bond, which at the time would have been viewed very badly, the fact that she slept with people while she was married, yeah, and all this sort of thing. Kaversky, you're naughty, but she did a lot of good things. So Kaversky slash Kennedy, you know, the Polish guy who was given the English name, he died of cancer in Munich on December of 1988, and his ashes were flown to London and interred at the foot of her grave.
Oh, that's cute.
Isn't that sweet?
Yeah, that is very sweet.
And then something just to mention, so Michael Morpurgo released a book about Skarbek's work with the resistance in World War II in 2018 called In the Mouth of the Wolf. And this is because, you remember Francis Kamertz?
Yeah.
The guy, SOE guy? It's Morpurgo's uncle.
Whoa.
Yeah, crazy.
Mental, mate. Mental. What else has he written?
Butterfly Line, Lion Butterfly, something like that. He did War Horse as well, Michael Morpurgo.
That'll be the one.
Yeah, something like that. Author William F. Nolan claimed that Ian Fleming, in his first James Bond novel, Casino Royale, published in 1953, modelled Vesper Lynd on Christine Granville, Skarbek. She is, yes.
Mate.
It's
not many people I'd leave your sister for, but that list is growing. I don't mean it.
That's horrendous.
I don't mean it. That's
fucking horrendous.
There's only Anne Hathaway.
Anne Hathaway? You wouldn't leave Rachel for her.
I don't know, you know.
Yeah, fair enough. According to Nolan, Fleming also based Tatiana Romanova on his 1957 novel From Russia with Love on Skarbek. But Claire Mully, who I mentioned before, is a biographer of Skarbek. She wrote The Spy Who Loved. She said that if Christine was immortalised as a carelessly beautiful double agent Vesper Lynd, Fleming is more likely to have been inspired by the stories he had heard rather than the woman in person. And Ian Fleming never actually claimed to have met her, even in passing.
Oh, that contradicts something that's coming up later on.
It certainly does.
In my facts, you're going to throw one of my facts out there before I get to them, aren't you?
Well, that's just one person's opinion. So that is the story of Christina Skarbek. What a woman. And
that's
I realise now, we've come to the end, you're going to have to say how you would have done stuff differently.
I've been thinking about this one, and this isn't through lack of trying. I don't think she should have done anything differently. That woman was a fucking boss.
Perhaps the thing we could have done differently, if we're going to have a slight moral tone to it, the British could have definitely done something differently there.
Yeah, that's fair. But herself, she doesn't need changing.
Maybe what she could have done is, like you said, used her feminine wiles and good looks to have got a British husband, so she wouldn't have had to have worked on the cruise liners and she wouldn't have died.
That would have been a nice one. But he could have been a psychopath as well. You never know.
So maybe she should have just had better taste in men.
Bond Downey, what was his name?
Yeah, Bondowney.
Bondowney. He could have married her, got the passport.
It's not. Is it Muldowney or something like that? Muldowney?
Yeah, it wasn't Bond.
Bondowney.
That was an epic. Is there a film?
There is. It's a Polish film, though. So one thing I struggled with is that the vast majority of information about her online is in Polish, and I don't speak Polish. But the Poles did release a film this year.
If only you knew someone
year.
That did.
I know, if only.
Strange.
If only he was around. I know, he just does his own thing, which is annoying.
That's fair.
Then it would have been him just consecutive interpreting. so I suppose... Oh, God, no, we've got to think of something better.
I don't think there's much better for that, mate, to be honest. It's a pretty epic story. I don't know.
Do you know what she could have done? She could have gone rogue. 1941 to 1943, when she'd been sidelined, she could have just gone rogue, set up her own, like... single policy party.
That'd be pretty good.
And just taken over Poland for herself. I think she should have done that.
Female Hitler. Just war now.
You just become what you hate. You either die a hero, live long enough to see yourself become the villain. I think she should have invaded Poland, counterattack, yeet the grenades from under her cheese sandwiches, and just stormed the capital, with the capital being Warsaw.
Fair enough. That's a good little mix on it. I honestly can't think of anything. I like your one. Let's go with
Thank
that.
You.
That can be the we can get Quentin Tarantino in on that.
That, oh my God.
That would be a Quentin yes. film, mate.
That would be such a good Quentin Tarantino film. Who would play Christina Scarbeck?
Trying to think someone that could get away with that kind of time. Who's the one that is in Lord of the Rings? She's Arwen.
Elizabeth Taylor? No.
Someone Hurley?
Not Elizabeth Taylor. Hurley? Elizabeth Hurley.
Is that her?
I think so. That's is that one of the Rolling Stones daughters or something?
No, it's not her. She was also in Armageddon. That's the way I'm going to get this. What a film, by the way. Have you watched Armageddon?
I don't think so.
You need to watch it. It's amazing.
I'll watch it.
It's the corniest, best film you'll ever see.
I love that. I love films that just don't even try to hide the fact they're corny as fuck.
Liv Tyler. But now I can see her. I don't agree with my previous statement.
Yeah, I mean, she's a bit older now.
You got any ideas?
What about Daisy, what's her face?
Oh, that's not a bad shout, actually. Is she the one
Daisy Edgar
Wars?
Jones?
Oh, no, I thought you were about Daisy Ridley. Ripley?
No,
Ridley.
Daisy Ridley would be better.
I think so. That's a massive shout from both of us.
Should we not get a poll to do it, though? I don't really know any Polish actresses.
No, it's...
I think we should probably get a poll.
Nah, come on. No. We all understand it.
Yeah, you're
She's
so
that
right,
good
actually.
An actor. She can put on an accent.
Did you ever watch Hurricane?
No.
You'll fucking love it. Here you go. Watch that tonight. I promise you will love it. And it's about the Polish... Okay.
Got
fine.
Plans, mate.
All right, big man.
Battlefield 6.
Sick. It's about the Polish pilots that went over to Britain to fly the Hurricanes in the Battle of Britain.
Yeah.
And it's the guy, you know, Ramsay Bolton from Game of Thrones, the Welsh guy. He plays one of the Polish pilots and his accent's just fucking shit. But the film is incredible. And he speaks Polish with a Welsh twang. And
I'll put it on the
Lucas
list.
Lucas is like, that's so shit.
I'll put it on the list.
You'll love it. You will love it. Yeah, okay, cool. So that's how we would have done things differently. She should have got her own forces together, taken Poland and Una reversed Hitler.
Have a bit of that. How'd you like that?
In the years that she was in Cairo and belly dancing bars in Yugoslavia.
Oh, she was having too much fun.
Oh, Belgrade, wasn't it? Belgrade. Yeah, but she lived a life and it would have been so sad having gone from belly dancing bars in Belgrade to working as a bathroom stewardess.
Yeah, it's a bit of a kick in the cunt, isn't it?
And she's a Polish countess as well.
Where'd all that money
go? She's just insane. It was long gone when she was in her adolescence.
Bless her.
Get back. No, her family's dead.
I feel like we need more of these random subjects because I like the ones that are well known, but these are better.
Yeah. Because normally we do events, but this is a biography of a person, but it's just too good to pass up. And the fact that there's not very 100%. Much English language resources. I could only find two podcasts in English online and they were pretty shit, about 20 minutes long.
Listen
it's
to
nice
ours.
To do one for an hour and a half on her.
Yeah, she needs digging into.
She does.
Not digging up, but digging into.
No, she can stay where she is.
Yeah, she can rest where she lays. I've only got one fact. Oh, she's got two facts, actually.
Okay, go on, two facts. Oh, wait, we need to introduce this. Chris's Facts Corner. The best segment of the show. We do. But we're not going to do one right now. Oh, a little plea to the audience, maybe a call to action. If anyone is good at musical endeavours, we really do need to revamp the theme tune. And we also need a jingle for Chris's Fact Corner.
Yes, please, you little fuckers. Please. Come on, email us in. We're waiting. We need
please,
some correspondence.
Please email us. Like we just want audience participation. We have such a small audience. We can
really
interact
can
with
get,
you.
Like, if at this stage, before this podcast gets massive, you know, worldwide renown, we'll see these comments.
Yeah,
in
every
3 years,
single one.
We won't look at your shitty emails. So come on, send them in. They're not shitty,
we
really. They'll be great.
We desperately need to see what everyone thinks and
we
to
want
improve.
To talk to you guys.
We do. We want to talk to you. We could even do an episode part where one of you comes on. And we make fun of you. You make
that
fun
would
of
be
us.
Fun. They can make
wouldn't
fun
it?
Of us. Someone could bring us a lesson.
Someone could just do like a roast battle style. again, digging into our personalities and the weird foibles. I notice you're not sniffing as much anymore, which is good.
Hey, it's drilling in. I'm getting there. Maybe I just had a bit of a cold on episode one.
No, I just think you were nervous. Maybe that's your tell. No, no one should play you in poker now. Yeah, that's your tick. Yeah, I'm just ADHD tick.
Yeah.
Okay. Go for it, girl.
Do you want a food-related one first or not?
Do the shit one that you said already disproven.
What I found in my 2 minutes of research is that supposedly she had a romantic fling with Ian Fleming.
Oh, I see. Which we can say she didn't because her biographer said she never met him. And he claimed. However, he never claimed to have met her.
Exactly. That could have been a pathway to that passport.
Perhaps he didn't want to say that he'd met her, and maybe
he's told someone because they've leaked it to Google.
Yes, that William, whatever his name is, that novelist. Shatner. William Shatner, you're quite right.
Big cool. Bill
okay,
Shatner.
What's the next one? And I'm expecting good things from this.
How many pierogies do you think can fit into Poland?
Oh, it does not disappoint.
I did try getting how many pierogies would fit into Christina Skarbek, but I couldn't figure that one out.
It went down a deep path.
Because all my previous facts and what food can fit in what, I've done all the workings out myself.
Oh, did you really? So they're probably wrong?
No.
Right,
no,
okay.
I'm joking.
Yeah.
You weren't meant to fall for that one.
But you lost a little bit of respect to me there, didn't you?
I asked AI how many pierogies could fit into Poland, and my first response was, how would they be stacked or fit? Are they on top of each other? Are they side by side?
They're clearly side by side.
So I said side by side. Come on, AI, don't be a dickhead.
Yeah.
So instead of just telling me the answer, I had to listen, because I've now got my new phone and it talks back to me, had to listen to the equation it made.
Yeah.
Fuck me, mate. Like, mathematicians are mental.
That's a lot of
mental strain for
your pee head.
You couldn't be any more autistic than a mathematician. I heard none of it. Honestly, it was this over that, plus the Poland, plus pierogies, minus C, minus equals, minus pi. I'm like, what?
Yeah, sorry, what?
But this number is big. It's a big number, okay?
Okay, I'm going to go in the trillions.
Yeah, you're right. So the area of Poland is approximately 312,679 square kilometres.
Right.
Pierogies in Poland, you'd have 70,776,047,574,799.
That's so many.
I know, and they'll go out of date so quick, wouldn't they, as well?
You'd have to eat them pretty quickly. You could have a pretty good eating competition to get those down your neck.
That would save the countries that can't eat.
So we should really just take the pierogies from Poland and drop them into Africa somewhere.
Africa, India, all the pierogies.
Ethiopia, where Christina Skarbek's second husband is the ambassador.
There we go. We've got links
there we
to
go.
Spread the pierogies.
Look at us creating a network, all of our own. We could
That's
be spies
how I would
as
have
well.
Done it differently. Pierogies should have been supplied.
Yeah, just like fuck everything else off and transport pierogies to Africa and you're good to go.
She missed a trick there. She was in Egypt.
She did. All right. Amazing.
Silly bitch. No,
silly
thank you.
Bitch.
That was cool.
I'm so glad you enjoyed, and I enjoyed the change in tempo and blowing your teeny tiny mind.
And I know what we're doing next as well.
Yes, you do. And can we think of like a riddle or something we can tease?
That's a bit fucking soon, isn't it? We just think we're going to riff a riddle.
Yeah,
this one's on you. You've got the brain power for a riddle riff.
Okay. Gonna edit out this silence whilst I think.
Yeah, that's fine. A little interlude.
I've got one. You're going to hate it.
Go on.
That XX has got a fancy hat on. Yeah. Yeah. And spoiler alert, people don't like it.
I know what you're talking about, because I know the subject.
Yeah.
This is where we need your correspondence, guys. Come on.
If anyone can guess what it is and what it might be, then please, please email in, tell us any other things you want us to cover, any suggestions, anything like that. Just please, you'll win a prize, and your prize is our adoration and respect.
Yeah.
So please email in. The first person to do so will get a big old shout out.
We will insult your character.
We will, and you can insult ours back. And what's better than that? That is truly the way that the British found relationships and long-lasting relationships. So please email in, and we will see you, I'm guessing, in a couple of weeks' time with our next story.
I reckon so. What's your plans for tonight?
Don't have any. You?
Fair enough.
Oh, no, you're playing some video games.
Some Battlefield 6 all night, baby.
Excellent. What do you enjoy?
And I'm out.
Oh, I'm good. I might get a Chinese.
Yeah, do it.
Oh, right. Well, lovely talking to you, Chris. And goodbye, everyone.
Peace out, home bros and sisters. Peace out.